Well, as Shane said, we're Tim and Holly, and we've been down in Bolivia, in South America, for a number of years. Our two children, we took them down when our daughter was about 16 months old, and our son was about 5, and now they've both graduated from high school down there, and so we've been down there for a little while, and we just brought my daughter up to start college in California. We're originally from California, Sacramento area. And I studied at Christian Heritage College, where I met my wife in San Diego, California. And on campus of that college, there was a group of scientists that had an institute that they formed, and it was called the Institute for Creation Research. And so those gentlemen were our science teachers. And I'd never met somebody that had a degree in science that believed in the Bible, that believed in creation. In like 6 days, creation. And anyway, it was really fascinating for me. And so I studied and took as many classes as I could from them. We graduated in 1984, years ago. 1993, we landed in La Paz, Bolivia, to start our ministry working at a youth camp, building a camp and working at camp. 3 weeks later, my former teacher from college landed also in Bolivia, La Paz. And it was Dr. Larry Vardaman of Institute for Creation Research, and he gave 2 weeks of lectures at the State University on creation evolution. And the students there had never heard of such a thing, and they were really interested in it because they're Catholics, most of them. And so Catholicism makes a big break between faith and reason, which means you don't try to prove your faith, and you don't try to put the Bible into history. You just accept what the Bible says by faith, and then Monday you go to work on reason. So your faith stays behind. And so when someone came and started teaching them that Genesis, you know, could actually be true, they were really blown away. And so after the teacher left, he left our name and phone number for follow-up. So anyway, that's what we've been doing now for 17 years, is follow-up on that visit. And so that's how we kind of got into it. So we're missionaries. But actually now I teach at the State University, culture anthropology, and I teach in Spanish. And we teach what we're going to go over this evening as just a part of it. So what we're going to start with is that our shock of arriving in La Paz, Bolivia, and not being prepared for how those people were different from us in our thinking pattern. Okay, and so what we're going to do, let's go to the first slide. Okay, worldview and origins. There's a lot of question marks that we have about the world that we live in. But none of us can live long enough to get enough expertise to answer all those questions. And so what we do is we invite somebody in to answer those questions for us. Okay, you follow that? This person that comes in and studies the world and what he sees goes through his glasses. And then he comes to a conclusion what it means. Dinosaur tracks in Bolivia going straight up a hill. What does that mean? Well, he will come in, study them, and give us his explanation as to why those dinosaur tracks are at 10,000 feet going straight up the mountain. This person that comes in is always going to interpret the world according to his belief system. Okay? It's like glasses help us to see, and it influences what we see. Everybody that comes in here between and brings in to study this material is going to study it from their belief system, from their worldview, from the way they think things should work. Okay? Now, what do you mean by that? What we're going to do is, in the next couple slides, we're going to go over the number of differences I have registered between me and my Bolivian friends. Okay? I have a different worldview. And if you come from a different culture, you have a different worldview. Maybe someone coming and visiting here will say, it's a different worldview. Operating on a different way. But I just want to, we're going to go down a list. And I want to show you what differences I've come up with and how those differences influence how I see the world and how they see it. Okay, next slide. Okay, one's worldview has a lot to do with their culture. It is recognized that there exists two major cultures that have influenced man's thinking since early history till today. Those are the Western culture and everybody else that's non-Western culture. There's difference of thinkings. I grew up in what's called a Western culture. The Western culture, these are two cultures of great contrast in how they think and perceive the world around them. Next slide, please. These are some of the differences. Now, if you can't see, you can move over towards the middle if some of this is getting in the way or if I'm getting in your way. But when I went down there, I noticed that the Bolivian people always had a spiritual perspective of things. If they had a flat tire on their car, it would be a spiritual thing. Why did this happen? What's going on here? For me, it's I ran over a nail. Okay, I need to fix it. In other words, it just happened. Flat tires happen. This over here says, no, there's something why this happened. Okay, so in other words, the Bolivian culture, non-Western culture, its tendency is spiritual reaction. My tendency is physical. Explain what happened in natural physical terms. Okay, you understand that? That's a big difference. Big difference. Number two, now this is an interesting difference that I didn't understand. This is my thinking, Western culture. Have you ever heard of supernatural and natural? You've heard of that, right? Okay. Do you know that this side over here doesn't think this way? That's kind of odd. Creator and created. Which means the creator is not separated from his creation. In other words, the spiritual part is in the created part. They're active. There is not a wall here. The creator and the created. Over here, it's supernatural, natural, and there's a wall here. It's divided. So in other words, we live in a natural world. When was the last time you saw a miracle? Okay. Over here, it's almost daily. They live in miracles. Or they live in spiritual struggles, which is always some tendency. Supernatural and natural is a Western thinking division that was implemented. So in other words, we as Christians do not live in a natural world. Because our world, biblically, is sustained by God, the Creator. He never left the world. So this barrier here is not there, or should not be there. And then if you have a natural man that shows supernatural powers, now what? Now where does he go? Now is he supernatural? And if he is, then what's the difference between him and God? Okay? We get confused. And it says in the end times, there's going to be people that are going to have certain powers and they are going to deceive the church. That's because we're in this framework. If you're in this framework, you wouldn't be. Because there's only one creator. Everything else is created. And so it doesn't matter how much power I have. I'm still not the creator. Over here, if I show power, now I've crossed the line to being supernatural. Is that a difference? That's a big difference, isn't it? That's another big difference. Because the difference I have been taught, supernatural and natural exists, I also have a feeling, or my reaction is that in the natural world, it's a closed system. In other words, it's a closed system. God does not come in and out of my world daily. Monday through Friday, I work. I change tires, I fix the car, I do what I have to do, but it's pretty much a closed system. I come out on Wednesday to Bible study, and now I shift gears, and now I'm in my spiritual world. But in my normal world, I'm in a closed system. Over here, it's open system, all day, every day. Their system is got spiritual powers and influences coming in and out of it all the time. Whereas in our system, mine, it's closed. I have to remember to think about God. I have to remember to to pray about things. Whereas this system is that there are bases on it and in it. Because closed system, because of the divisions, we have a division of mind and body, which what that basically means is that we can apply this psychology, counseling, and whatever. We divide things up very neatly. If you have a problem with your body, you go to the doctor. If you have a problem with your mind, you go to the psychologist's mind. If you have a problem with your soul, then you go to the pastor, or that psychologist, Suke, but anyway. They are integrated. Everything is integrated. And so in other words, the pastor has just as much authority in any of these areas, because in Scripture, a lot of the physical problems were also spiritual. They had root in demonic presence. And so it's kind of like, okay, this system here is very much, like I said, in touch up here. Here, autonomous, we North Americans are proud to be individualistic. We are the Lone Ranger. We work by ourselves. We do a lot of things on our own. Over here, they don't do much on their own. They're very dependent. They work as a group. They work as a community. They work. But us, we just go in and we do it. And we are, like I said, Lone Ranger and his sidekick. What was his sidekick name? Yeah. Do you know what that means in Spanish? Stupid. Okay. Okay. So here we have a system here that is very different from this system. Okay. You notice the differences in what's going on here? This system here is very divided and individualistic. In other words, it's all about me. It's about have it your way. It's about special orders don't upset us. Okay. You are the center of your universe. I am the center of my universe. Over here, it is community. Nobody steps out of line unless the patriarch of that community says, okay, this is the way we're going. In this non-Western culture, it would not be correct to evangelize small children without parents' permission. Because now you're usurping the authority of the community. And you're basing it on individual persons. Now, when we at church, we say, we're going to play him. Who wants to accept the Lord? Come forward. Or what? That's individualistic. Over here, it would be family. It would be in community. And so then they would say, well, let us talk about it. And we'll get back to you. And so that all the authorities of that family are consulted. And they agree together to do whatever. But we are very individualistic. Here, because we're individualistic, because we're autonomous, because we are also very cerebral. We're very analytical. We're always thinking, hypothesizing, inventing. Over here, it's meditative. So in other words, their inward thinking is thinking on something, meditating. For us, we are analyzing. So in our devotions in the morning, we parse the Greek context of whatever. And that's our devotions. And it's analytical. It's taking apart. It's trying to figure out. Where here it's kind of like, speak to me. I want to know. So it's a different form of activity, mental activity. Here, because we are analytical, we have a lot of ideas and theories. And that is based on our school system. Our school system, we are full of information. And then after we graduate, we try to figure out what we're going to do with this certificate. And whether or not we really want to do what we just spent 4 years studying for. Okay? They are in practice. They are already doing what they want to do. And then they go and get more equipping to keep doing what they're doing. We go and base ideas and theories, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, huh? Sometimes we figure out we don't really like what we just studied for. But anyway, I hope you're getting a little idea of the differences of these left and right. And The next slide and the other one, there's more differences, and I'll comment on how we ran into each other in with the culture because of our cultural differences. But these cultures each have a science, okay? So when you're adding up all these things, we're going to see where their science comes from. And that actually we are the inventor of the theory of evolutionary science based on our culture. Number 9, Western thinking. What do we do with literature? Most of the literature, Western culture was birthed in Greek philosophy. The Greek philosophers were really the ones that gave birth to Western culture. They were the ones that systemized the thinking. They are the ones that put things in order. They are the ones, they had their ideas, their theories, their thinking about things, generated what's called mythology and allegories. Myths came from the Greeks, Greek mythology, because they were really good at imagining, theorizing. Everything's internal. Everything is mental. Over here on this side, it's historical. I mean, they communicated what was. They weren't imaginative to take off in their imagination as to what could be. Okay, so what does this have to do with anything? Well, you know what? Our scriptures come from this side. And modern day science comes from this side. So in other words, when you take scriptures and someone asks you, is the book of Genesis literal or allegorical? What they're asking is, how should we interpret it? Through which culture? And so if Genesis was written by this side, then what are we doing interpreting it by this side? We're crossing the and violating the original intent of the author and his culture. And that's often what we do when we go cross-culturally. Knowledge. For us, the Western culture, knowledge is to dominate, to subject. If you have a degree, you can climb higher up the ladder. If you have a degree, you get more money. If you have a degree, in other words, it's all about power. Where on this side, they don't care about money. They really don't. They want to know, what are we supposed to be doing? How are we supposed to do it? And so it's, in other words, to know or knowledge is to be obedient, is to follow through. For us, it's kind of like dominant. And so we cram all these verses into our mind to do what? To win a plaque or to do whatever. But a lot of times we fall short of practice. We have a lot of the theory and the knowledge, but because we're kind of a Western thinkers, the practice really lacks behind us many ways. Logic. This is an interesting one. We as Western thinkers are linear logic. In other words, here's a line. Our logic goes right on this line. And so it has to be sequential. And it has to be systematic. And everything has to make sense. And everything has to be on this line. So we start with the first one. Okay. God is love. God is holy. God is just. Well, how does that fit on the line? All those three things, are they true? They are true, aren't they? But then how could a loving God send anybody to hell? See? That's a question we come up with because we think this way, linear. And everything has to fit on this line. If God is this way, then how can he? Everything's got to fit. Okay? They are block logic. God is loving. God is holy. God is just. And none of those blocks corrode or erode the other one. They are contained blocks that don't lose any of their value by putting them on a line. So in other words, is God loving? Yes, God is loving. How do we know God is loving? Anybody know John 3:16? Yes.
John 3:16. When God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, whosoever
Okay. God is loving. That's right. Now, whosoever believeth in Him shall have eternal life. What if I don't believe in Him? I don't accept His love. Now what? Will God judge me? Yeah. Okay. Because God is also holy. God is merciful. But God is also just. And He's already set the rules out as to what's going to happen. So in other words, block logic is non-Western. It's sometimes sporadic. It's spontaneous. And you know what they call us, North Americans down there? You guys are so systematic. You are so programmed. You are so unspontaneous. It's because they are so random. And you're like, you are so random. I mean, and it's kind of like, but they don't like our sequential timeline. Oh, time. We'll get to that one. Linear logic. This is a big one. Thought. For us, we're abstract thinkers. We can think of things that you can't touch or feel. We can think of things out of their context. That's abstract. Abstrayendo, taking out of its, like a needle. Plucking a needle off a tree and then examining the needle. Pine needle, instead of looking at the whole tree or the whole forest. So we are looking, we are reductionists. We reduce things to the minimum. And we study the minimum. And we look at the minimum. They are concrete, holistic, whole thing. And how all, it all interacts within each other. And this is where I think a lot of confusion comes in for us with science, in that we don't understand what's all related to make science function. Do you know to make science function, you have to know theology. You have to make a stand on theology. You have to have a philosophy in place. And then you have science. Third pass, third level. But today, if you want to be a scientist, you just go study science. If you want to be a philosopher, you study philosophy. If you want to be a missionary or be a pastor, you study theology. You go to three different places. But yet, to have science, you got to practice all three. Here, categories. We are good at categories over here. And we are so good, we put this line in here of sacred and secular. A lot of people have a secular job. I have a secular job. But someday I'll have a sacred job. What's that? Over here, all is sacred. All is sacred. Everything you do, do as unto the Lord. Whatever you do. So in other words, we have categories. Yeah, I'm not a missionary. I'm not a pastor. I'm just a mechanic. I'm just a carpenter. I have a secular job. In this category, there's no such thing as a secular job. Everything is to be done for the glory and honor of the Lord. And the Lord needs testimony in every avenue of work. So in other words, we have these categories over here. They don't have those over here. Faith and reason. Because of these categories, we like categories, we have come up with faith divided and is separate from reason. In other words, yes, we can believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, that He raised from the grave, that He paid for our sins, that. Okay, but you want to talk about creation? Oh, no. That's Bible. That's faith. So in other words, okay, did God really create? Yes, He did. How do you know? By faith, I believe. Did God judge the world by water? Yes, He did. How do you know? By faith. By geology? No, that's reason. You can't apply reason. It's by faith, I believe. Okay, so over here, we have accepted a division between faith and reason. Where over here, it's a reasonable faith. They said, was there a flood? Oh, yeah. Why do you think there's fossils at 10,000 feet in the Andes Mountains of fish? They said, come on. You know? Sea turtles, the same thing, 10,000 feet. And you know, the believing just kind of like, yeah. And we're kind of like, no, I've studied 4 years, 6 years. I've got a degree, and I know that can't be that. It's our division. Symbols. This is a good one. We have fixed symbols. We believe in symbols that maintain and have power. They don't have that many symbols. In fact, the Hebrews, which are non-Western thinkers, were prohibited to make images and to have symbols. A symbol that's fixed, that never changes, I'll give you an example. I grew up in Sacramento, California, so it's kind of a big city. It has stoplights. Stoplights are symbols. Red, yellow, green. Okay? Those meanings of those colors are fixed. What time of the day does red mean stop? What time of the night does red mean stop? Okay. Not so in Bolivia. Their meanings are very dynamic. Okay? They'll have a stoplight, and what it means is stop if it's Monday through Friday, 7 to 7 at night, more or less. After that, you're hitting the weekend. Now it's, if you don't see anybody coming, slow down, look both ways, and keep going. That's basically what the symbols. Symbols are dynamic in this culture, which means that for us, symbols are fixed and they always have that meaning. For them, the symbol does not control them. The symbol controls us, but not them. Okay? Now, you might have a problem with this if you come to Bolivia and I go through a stop sign. You'll say, he's a missionary, he didn't even stop. Okay? Because if I stop, I will cause an accident at many stop signs. Because internet has influenced the world. So now the world has seen all our movies and all of our cities, and they have copied them. They have painted crosswalks. They put up stoplights. They've done everything, but they have no idea what they mean. Okay? So they attach their own meaning to them. And be careful that you aren't attaching your meaning and they're attaching their meaning, and you don't mean the same thing. A crosswalk in Bolivia is more like a 50-point zone, okay? I mean, you run. Cars do not stop for pedestrians, even if there's a crosswalk. The lines down the middle of the road, there's a 3-lane highway. After about 6 months, there's no more lines down the highway. They're erased. Why? Because people don't stay within the lines. I mean, they're riding over the lines, and so the lines wear out. Symbols, dynamic or fixed. This is a good one too. Because we emphasize thinking, one of the most important parts of our culture and of a lot of our churches is what we believe. You want to become a member of my church? Sign this document that you're in agreement with all my creeds. Okay? They don't care about creeds down there. You know what they say? Show me your deeds. I'll watch you for a month. And if your life measures up to what you say, then fine. But otherwise, that's why the book of the New Testament was written. Some people even dispute if it was originally in Greek. But let's say it was in Greek, but it was with a non-Western mindset. Non-Western thinkers wrote it. That's why there's a book right after the book of Luke. Luke, John. What's the next one after John? Acts. The Acts of the Apostles. Right? Now, if we were to write it, it'd be the Facts of the Apostles. Okay? Because that's what we are more geared towards is information. We're information driven. And that's what we want. Down here, we got nouns and adjectives. In our culture, we describe everything in nouns and adjectives. It's blue. It's yellow. It's long. They describe things in verbs. Pencil. It's used for writing, erasing, jabbing. They describe things by their use. We describe things in an abstract form that has nothing to do sometimes with its use. So in other words, by color, by form, by shape, but not by what it does. Time. Difference. You know there's a difference between North American time and what's called Bolivian time. There's a big difference. Why? A friend of mine got married about a year and a half ago now in Bolivia. North American to a Bolivian. They got married in Bolivia. They sent out two sets of invitations. Why would they do that? Because they had two different times as to when the ceremony was. Okay. For the North Americans, they put the time. It was actually to start 5 o'clock. For the Bolivians, they sent it out at 4 o'clock, so they'd be there at 5. Time.
We call that Ephraim Standard Time.
You know what? You know what? My wife and I were kind of observing that communities that are close-knit and that are far away from metropolitan centers often have this side of culture and thinking, and that actually our thinking patterns merge over to this side when we're in a really academic environment that pushes us, that impersonalizes us, that shoves us to work by time, for money, for whatever, for material things, that we start changing our priorities and our thinking. And that's the danger of when we get international students that come here, we convert them. And then they can't go back because now they don't fit back into their culture. Time. Time for us is linear. At 6 o'clock we get up, 7 o'clock you had breakfast, 8 o'clock you're at school, 9 o'clock and everything is by point. Okay, I worked my way through college or through, graduate program at UPS, United Parcel Service. You know, time makes money. Time is money. Time for us is linear. Time is progressive. Every 6 months, we come out with a new model of something. Okay? Over here, and here, time controls whatever. Time is money. Time you can sell. Time you can buy. Time you can kill. Time is a commodity that somehow exists. Over here, time does not exist. Well, the only thing that exists really is events. Events happen within time, but it's event that controls the time, not time that controls the event. So in other words, when we have an event in Bolivia, it may start at this hour or it may not. It may get over at this hour, but probably not. Because it gets over when the event is done. You don't start pointing at your watch and, you know, going like this. Because that's rude. Time then is communicated as more important than the person that you're with. And so you don't cut off an appointment to be with somebody. It's kind of hard when you have a North American time set and you go to Bolivia and they want to come by for a cup of coffee at 11 p.m. Drop by. And you're kind of like, this is my time. My personal time. But you know what? They don't have personal time. They are community. And so we can be kind of offensive when we claim our personal time. Next one is time is linear, progressive. Time controls everything. Over here, time is cyclical. In other words, the time is cyclical in the year of events, birthdays. For the Jewish people, it was all the festivals of the harvest season, of Passover, of the Feast of Booths. So in other words, time was marked, it was conservative, and it was cyclical. Here, time is not conservative, it's progressive, and it keeps changing. Everything changes over time. Now I think you can start seeing where evolution comes in on this side, in that evolution is based on time. And that with time, everything progresses to a higher state of complexity, which is based on our concept of time. Whereas we know, really, time destroys. Over time, everything decomposes. Second law of thermodynamics shows that over time, everything returns to zero. So in other words, our thinking patterns on this side have brought us to a concept of what we think science is like, of what we teach in school, of what science is like. Space. Three-dimensional space, geometry, all that came out of Western Greek thinking, and that it's very abstract, because what do you, you know, how do you define space? It's like time. It's not there. We define it very well. And in fact, we all have, since we are a very individualistic culture, we all have even our own individual space, don't we? How much is our individual space? What distance is that? Okay, three feet? Okay. You know how much space, personal space, a dear Bolivian has? Zero. Zero. How many Bolivians can you fit on a 40-passenger bus? Okay. Okay. Until the door won't shut. Okay. It's kind of like they do not have personal space. It does not exist because it's abstract. And yet we come into the culture with, get away from me. You're in my face. You're in my space. And it's kind of like they kind of look at you and like, okay, we didn't know. I didn't come with space. You go through a restaurant in Bolivia, you are entering everyone else's space. Everyone is in the same space. You cannot float through in your bubble through the restaurant, going to the table in the back. You say hi to every person you see. And you say provecho, which is bon appetit, which is enjoy your meal as you're walking through. Otherwise, to not acknowledge somebody when you walk right past them is pretty rude. Because we don't have space. Here, competition. We love competition. The Olympic Games, where do they come from? Yeah, all right. Let's compete. You know what? Competing builds so much camaraderie, builds so many bridges between communities, doesn't it? No, you don't. Those guys, we're going to beat them. We're going to kill them. We're going to hang them. You know, it's kind of like, okay. Over here, this culture does not go for competition. It goes for cooperation. And so another is community again. We're not vying one against the other. We're there to help each other and to build each other up. We're not climbing up a ladder, stepping on people's fingers and kicking them off. That's competition. Okay, can you see now, adding this up, how this could lead to an evolutionary thought? Competition, survival of the fittest, over time. Imperfect eliminates, or the perfect eliminates the imperfect. It's all there. It's in our thinking and how we interpret the world around us. Now, the axis of this worldview, it's a worldview turning on an axis. The axis is something that motivates that whole worldview. Our worldview is motivated by the law. Okay? So in other words, to be a good Christian, what do we have to do? That's right. Do. This is what we do. We're human doings, right? Over here, it's not the law, it's relations. So what does that mean? That means when we went to Bolivia, we struggled. Because the law does not mean that much over there if it means sacrificing a relationship. They will violate the law to keep a relationship. We will trash a relationship to abide by the law. The law says, I have to do it, I'm sorry. They won't do that. They will say the law is secondary. The relationship is primary. So, when I go to Bolivia, and I'm a law-abiding citizen, I was there a month, and I'm driving on a steep downhill in City of La Paz in a vehicle, and I'm coming up to an intersection that has red lights, green lights, has stop lights. I'm ready to go through it. The problem is, I end up going through it on red light because it's manually run, and I'm coming down a steep hill, and he skips yellow and goes right to red, the policeman. He's running the stoplight. It's green when I'm 2 feet from the line of crossing into it. He switches over to red. I go through a red light. Did I go through a red light? Yes. Did he skip yellow? Yes. Okay. He blew his whistle. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I pull over, which was the dumbest thing to do. But I pull over. He comes up and says, you went through a red light. I said, yes, you're right. You skipped yellow. Yes, you're right. Well, we agreed on that. And he says, well, we can fix this here, or I'll give you a ticket and you can fix it downtown. And I said, if I did something wrong, give me the ticket. I'm North American. I'm a law-abiding citizen. Give me the ticket. Okay. He gives me the ticket. I take it down to the police station. You got 24 hours. And the police captain behind the desk says, how do you want to pay for this? I said, what's my options? He says, 2 nights in jail. $100. I'm like, whoa. For going through a red light, which wasn't even red because he skipped yellow. He says, no, for drunk driving. The cop wrote me up for drunk driving. Okay, so now because I did not fix it on the street, now I got to fix it at the police station. And so then the guy at the police station, the captain says, okay, I'll give you 3 options. 2 nights in jail, $100, or you can go to the hardware store, buy 2 cans of paint, 1 black, 1 white, and I'll tear up your ticket. And I thought, should have done this a little earlier, huh? Because actually, when I went through the red light, it was noon. The guy on his beat was looking for lunch. I probably could have got by with just giving him a sandwich. Instead, now I got to buy 2 gallons of paint, which was more money. I came back with 2 gallons of paint, put it on the podium thing there, and he ripped up ticket, and I left. Okay. Law versus relationship. Okay? They had a need. A lot of people view South Americans as corrupt. But you know what? They really, I don't think, are. They just see it differently than we do. I'm from a construction background. We build houses in Sacramento. Last week, we just took the roof off a garage, and my brother had to finish putting the trusses back up this week while I'm here with you. But anyway, this truck pulls up to build a house next to ours. We're renting a house, and they're going to build a new house. And I thought, this is going to be interesting. Dump truck pulls up full of river rock, sand, and gravel to do the foundation. It is a big dump truck, big Volvo. And 3 guys jump out, get in the back of that truck for the next 2 hours. You're unloading this dump truck. See anything wrong with the picture? It's a dump truck. Okay. What do dump trucks do? They dump. And I'm like, I'm intrigued. And I go out there because, you know, we're just getting off working at UPS, you know, parcel service. It counts steps between every stop. Anyway, I asked this guy, you know, we got trucks like this in the United States. He says, that's nice. I said, they're called dump trucks. He says, yeah, we got them down here too. I said, well, the dump trucks down there, you load them up and you dump them and they goes out the back and you're done. Yeah, this is a dump truck. I said, doesn't it work? Yeah, it works. Well, then why don't you pull the lever? And he says, you know what? If I pulled that lever, what would those 3 guys do for work that are in the back of the truck unloading? Okay? Relationship. They do not care about how much money they make. They care about maintaining community. And that's why we go into their culture and we do not have any idea of what their values are. And we go and we evangelize them. And what do we bring to evangelize? 4 spiritual laws. All right. Yeah, cool, huh? And they're kind of like, what's this? I mean, why don't you talk to me about a relationship with my father? That I can get into that. But what's this? So in other words, adding all this up, do you know what they think of us down there as North Americans? I asked a Bolivian friend of mine, I says, what do you guys think of us in general? Not just, you know, don't look at me, just me. Tell me what you think of me. But he says, well, you guys are really distant. You have your schedules when we can talk and call and come by your house or not. You make us clean our feet. when we're coming in the house or whatever. Make sure you don't get, you know, and the sofas are all covered. You are really materialistic in many ways. Your space, you act like as if when you set up for conferences and church, you got all these tables and chairs, and it's really cold. In other words, you're really cold. You're indifferent. You're materialistic. You're time oriented, and we have to get on your agenda to be able to see you. You know? And it's kind of like, whoa, that's kind of an indictment, isn't it? But you know what? I started thinking about it, and I started thinking, you know what? Isn't that what a lot of us think of God? Our culture? God is cold. God is distant. God doesn't really care. God, do you see what's happening? God is... And you know, it's kind of like, whoa. In other words, what the Bolivian thinks of us is what oftentimes we think of God. And then our science, which is accepted by most universities, is really cold. It's calculated. It's predetermined by chemical reactions. It is impersonal. It just happens. So in other words, our science reflects what we think of God. And what we think of God is really what other cultures think of us. So what we're going to do is, I think we're going to, what's the next, Ronnie, what's the next slide? Okay. These two patterns of thinking can be identified with two great cultures of the past that continue to influence thinking today. Western thought was practiced by the Greek culture, non-Western thought practiced by the Hebrew culture. So in other words, our scripture was written by this culture. And when we try to understand it through our culture, we might be violating the original intent of the authors. We have to be careful of what we're trying to do. So what? What does any of this have to do with me? The scriptures come from Hebrew culture. Modern day science comes from Greek culture, from ours. Okay. I tell you what. Let's leave it on that one and take a break. Is that all right? Okay. And if you want to take a break and not come back, that's fine with me too. So, anyway, if you want to go, you can look at the table. You can look at some of the books. Okay. Yes. Okay. We will start when we get back. Okay?